Let's get into it with my only guest this afternoon. He's a gentleman and a scholar, a great broadcast journalist, great writer, and the host of the Politics Show on BCFM every Friday in Bristol, thisweek.org.uk. Great to have him back on the programme. So much to get into in the next 50 minutes or thereabouts. Tony Gosling in Bristol, no less. Welcome back.
Hey, actually, I'm over in Ross on Wye today, just outside. And also, the BCFM Politics Show has been on hold for the last few months. Well, we have a little sort of, I suppose you could say, dispute, really. They don't seem to want to let me back, even though I'm ready to go remote, Richie. So I'm just doing what I can to negotiate with Pat Hart, who's the managing editor, on that programme. I mean, he's trying to take on the politics stuff on the station. And, you know, I would very much like to be back on FM. But, I mean, I would suggest that this is, you know, it may be that you won't see me on FM anymore in Bristol. We don't know. We're just very much hoping that within the next couple of weeks we'll get the show back on FM again.
Might that be down to some of the controversial subjects that you cover, even though you cover them objectively and you provide balance and it's always very interesting, but you've made a few waves down there? Might that be the reason, or am I overreaching?
Well, I have to distance myself from the comment that I might be objective.
Yeah.
I try to be as objective as possible. I tend to get a bit subjective on certain issues, such as the September the 11th attacks, the Islamophobia and the 7/7 London bombings, for example. I don't really see myself as objective on those issues so much as absolutely appalled and disgusted by the official narrative that is being spoon-fed to the population as if we're in some sort of fascist regime and that there is an Orwellian truth that we have to believe, which makes no sense, you know. So in that way, I wouldn't say I am objective, but I do a very, I think, pretty good job in trying to get balance in covering political events in Bristol, you know, around the city, and getting all sides of the argument. And at the moment, we've got is a mayor who's supposedly a Labour mayor, but what you're getting is a kind of Blairite attitude. And in fact, many of the MPs in Bristol who are Labour MPs are, you would class as Blairites, because they were very anti-Jeremy Corbyn, made statements against the leader when they should really have been criticising the Tories during the Corbyn regime. So, you know, it's a bit of a hot potato, Bristol as a city. Lots of money going through the mayor's hands and the council's hands. And I'm rather disappointed to not be able to be doing my weekly slot where we're calling our elected representative, the mayor, to account for the nearly £400 million of our money that if we don't pay, we can go to jail. The money they spend every year. That's my job, is to call these people to account. And at the moment, I can do it online, and I am doing it online at thisweek.org.uk, but it's not the same as being on FM in the city, Richie.
No, it's not. And I know you've got a very big audience there. I know this because I listen to the programme, and I often get contacted by people who listen to you there. You've got a big audience, and I hope that they're speaking up for you. Listen, your opinions of 7th of July or September the 11th, I know that you've endeavoured over the years to introduce people or to invite people on who disagree with you, and that's very sound journalism, you know.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't even, if I was the station manager, I wouldn't worry about that. I'd be more interested in, when you're covering Bristol politics, are you making sure that you're hearing from the various parties? You always do that. And it's to your credit. And I hope your listeners, you know, contact that station and say, listen, we've got a brilliant presenter here. Let's keep him. And look, we'll obviously follow that one closely. Let me ask you this, Tony. This has been making me laugh today. You mentioned Marvin Rees, the mayor of Bristol. Marvin is a black gentleman. I've been listening today to Peaches Golding, who's a black lady from America who serves incredibly as the Lord Lieutenant of the county and city of Bristol. How could Bristol be institutionally racist if the mayor is black and the Lord Lieutenant is a black woman originally from the United States of America?
Well, I mean, I guess they would say that that you don't get the proper sort of representation amongst, say, for example, council officers and council to reflect the ethnic diversity in the city, and they're absolutely right to point that out. I think, you know, what we're being led here by is not the councillors and the electors. There's a city establishment known as the Bristol Mafia, colloquially, which is the merchant venturers. They're a very secretive organisation that are very powerful in Bristol, and they like to think that they can pull the strings from, you know, from behind the scenes. These people are almost universally white. They're just the first black woman was made a merchant just a few weeks ago, who happens to be a friend of the mayor's. So, you know, that is one of the reasons they say it, and I think they're right. You know, we do need to have more, all sorts of different ethnic minorities in some of the leading positions in the city, not just, you know, the mayor himself, but let's see more councillors, more, and particularly more council officers.
But why, though? Why, T? I just want to point out, the noise in the background is rain. I know the rain is beating down all over the country.
It's starting to rain, yeah.
It's starting to rain. We can hear the rain there, but don't worry about that. Why should we have more representation? You're talking about positive discrimination, Tony, which I can't bear. Yeah, let's have more black and ethnic minority people. Let them get there on merit like everybody else.
Well, I just think that I did do some of this stuff, Richie, when I was working for the fire service.
You did.
What you do is you advertise more to ethnic minorities, because what's going on is a lot of ethnic minorities are basically self-censoring. They're thinking, well, this job, I don't stand a chance of getting it, so what's the point of me even applying for the job? So it's absolutely 100% fair to, if you want to call it positive discrimination, positively discriminate in the your target audience for your job ads, and also that you're actually literally targeting ads specifically at ethnic minorities that are underrepresented, because what you're often getting is you're getting a short list of candidates for jobs which is almost exclusively white, even though there may well be lots of ethnic minorities who are qualified and can't do that job. They're simply not applying because they see all the white faces and they think, well,
we're going to have. I don't agree with that, and I'm guessing you would expect me to say that. We're having a bit of interference because of the rain. It's absolutely belting it down there.
Is that any better?
Yeah, I think that's a million times better. T, marvelous. I don't know what you did there. You see, you're a bit of a genius there. You're a man of many talents. What did you do? Because it's a million times better.
I took you off speakerphone.
I was on speakerphone, was I? You wouldn't put the BBC on speakerphone, Gosling. What's going on? Oh, anyway, I thought you were on a roller coaster a moment ago. I'm glad that you're back. Look, I ultimately believe that blacks and ethnic minorities, or BAME people, are generally overrepresented in politics and the media anyway, according to the latest statistics. I think any sort of positive discrimination is not good.
Yeah, you're right about the media, but definitely not within the council officers, particularly senior council officers. And I would like to see, you know, at least a few. At the moment, you've got to kind of... This is what I would call the permanent government. It's like the civil service in Westminster. And I think they're very underrepresented there. So anyway, we'll see. Maybe there will be some more. And they may be right, Peaches and Marvin, on this one.
The last thing I'll say on that, because I don't want to waste time on this. There's so much more going on that we need to talk about. We're making assumptions about people that because of the colour of their skin, they're bound to see the world differently, and therefore they have to be at the table. That's a ridiculous assumption to make about people just because of the colour of their skin, right? It must be.
Well, I just think we need to see a proper spread of the people running things should represent roughly. I mean, that's democracy, isn't it? The broad spread of the sorts of people who are out there in the community. And if they don't, then there's a problem.
Yeah. But you know what? Me and you will butt heads on this on another day. What have you made of the response to what happened to George Floyd from a UK point of view? You and I have known each other for years, both of us disgusted by that. You know, we've seen some bad things over the years in our jobs and our capacity as producers. It's a nasty thing to see. It's dreadful. You hope that justice will be served, if it's possible, because of trial by media and everything else. But the reaction over here in the UK, a little bit disproportionate, Tony. I mean, this happened in the United States. Our police officers don't carry guns, yeah. You know? What do you think?
No. Okay, well, on your first point about police officers not carrying guns, I was very interested to see back in 2016, I think it was, we had another Black Lives Matter protest in Bristol. And the protests, I happened to bump into them as I was walking around in town. And the protesters were chanting, hands up, don't shoot, hands up, don't shoot. Now, to me, this isn't a US script they're reading from. It's not a British chant. I mean, you're not really in that sort of situation with the armed police in Bristol. Yes, there may be discrimination, and I absolutely give them every right to have their protests, of course. But it looks to me as if this is a US script. Now, this starts to look, doesn't it, as if the Black Lives Matter campaign is not a genuine grassroots campaign, like many of the anti-apartheid campaigns were in the 1980s that I remember, that people were not funded to do it. They did it in their spare time with their own money. What's happening with Black Lives Matter is it's clearly being foundation funded. These big foundations like Open Society Foundation, George Soros' foundation, and amazingly, the Ford Foundation, and there are one or two other big foundations of funding Black Lives Matter.
Is there hard evidence, Steve? Tony, sorry to interrupt you. Is there hard evidence that Soros' Open Society foundations have put money in? I'm asking that not because I'm scared of any reprisals,
yes.
But
the answer is yes.
Is there real
it's
evidence?
Out there. I mean, I was looking this up quite diligently about a week or so ago, and those two foundations, definitely Ford Foundation and Open Society Foundation, have put millions into Black Lives Matter. Now, whether that goes to Britain exactly or the States, or whether it comes to Britain from the US, I don't know. But the point here is, he who pays the piper calls the tune. As soon as you start to get an organisation which is funded to the tune of millions of dollars or pounds by one of these foundations, they will not give that money to leaders that they don't like. So they will be basically involved in choosing the leaders of that campaign. And that, it can compromise the campaign. So look, for example, the Black Lives Matter group in Bristol decides that Henry Ford, who was a pro-Nazi during the war, in fact, Hitler said he wanted Ford to be one of his leaders in the United States, a coup against the American government in the 1930s. Henry Ford, he has statues, so maybe the Bristol group of Black Lives Matter might decide we want to go and pull his statue down. Now, does that mean that they won't be funded by the Ford Foundation anymore?
Yeah.
This is the sort of question I think, you know, needs to be asked, and I've seen that once or twice, people pulling people up on this. You know, when you start to get big organisations that are funded like that, they are potentially compromised. So the other thing is this a real totally legitimate and balanced anti-racist group? So is it going to go for Israel and Palestine? And that's the main open wound of racism, as far as I'm concerned, in the world today, is the appalling treatment and, in fact, the racist laws that have been brought in two years ago in Israel against the Palestinians.
The nation
so is it going to become
an
anti-apartheid campaign as well, and an anti-Israel campaign? Is it going to become a boycott, divestment, sanctions campaign?
It won't be. Loads of comments on this. Tony Gosling is our guest. We've got Tony till around about 6:30, I reckon, today. Thisweek.org.uk, that's where you can hear him for the time being. Please God, the sane heads will prevail, and we'll get him back on BCFM for his brilliant programme on Fridays. Tony, a couple of interesting comments about this. While I'm getting these comments up, and I do want to read them out, Tucker Carlson has said, I know that he winds a lot of people up, and he winds me up as well, but he's better than Bill O'Reilly, God love him. And Carlson says he thinks Black Lives Matter is going to become the biggest political party in the United States. And I think he said, I hope I'm not misquoting him, that look no further than Black Lives Matter for the 2024 presidential winner. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I am surprised that they aren't putting forward a candidate for this presidential election, because Joe Biden is so hopeless, it almost looks as if Trump is going to get in again on another buy, you know, because we had Hillary Clinton against him last time, he was also appalling.
Yeah.
So it looks like the Democratic Party is in its little suicide plane, heading to hit the ground anytime soon. So that, yeah, they seem to be committing suicide, but by the appalling leaders that they're choosing. Biden, by the way, is, I mean, if he does get in, it would be an absolute miracle, and Trump will really have to fall flat flat on his face. I think, for example, Trump is someone who can think on his feet. I think he'll do quite well in the presidential debates. I think Biden will be hopeless. So I don't see, understand why Black Lives Matter wouldn't, in the next couple of months, literally, put forward their own candidate, they would almost certainly be a shoo-in, because there's such disillusion in the left and the Democratic Party with Biden. I mean, he's obviously corrupt. I mean, you look at what's happened with Hunter Biden and this whole business in Ukraine, where, I mean, if people, I don't know how much people know about that, but Hunter Biden basically got the national prosecutor in Ukraine sacked.
He did indeed.
Because for the oil company, the Ukrainian oil company he was working for. And Joe Biden was involved in all of that. So the idea that you are going around the world, sending your son into a country in order to basically make loads of money, extract the oil, loads of profits, and if anyone in that country tries to do anything about it, in other words, to bring you before a judge and say what you're doing is illegal, that you get the chief prosecutor of the country out of his job and pushed out. I mean, I think this happens actually quite a lot, Richie.
It does,
half the world. It's just there. It's been absolutely thrown into very, very, very clear relief for everyone to see if they can be bothered.
Loads of comments. Let me read a couple of comments. I mean, when I look at the US presidency, just very briefly, you look at Hillary, the devil incarnate. You look at Clinton, you know, Satan's third cousin, twice removed. You look at baby Bush, basically Forrest Gump. His daddy was the guy who carried out a Kennedy assassination. It's just a joke. Let me read, in my opinion, a couple of comments. John says, Tony is miles off on positive discrimination. Get into him, Richie. I don't get into Tony. Tony's too clever. We've known each other years. Kelly says, there's no room. This is Kelly in Cork, the rebel county. There is no room for working class people in politics, regardless of colour. I agree with Kelly. And Faisal says, the measures suggested by Tony aren't bad at all, but we've seen that ethnic minorities are no more immune to corruption than anybody else and will make little to no difference, says Faisal. Just a few comments on what we were discussing earlier on, which triggered a few. Hey, Tony, what do you reckon to this? It was in the Telegraph this morning. I nearly choked on me cornflakes when I read that Oxford University will allow young black men and women, well, they will give them a pass in the exams if they say that they were triggered by the murder of George Floyd. What's going on, Tony? This is madness.
Oh, that is totally and utterly ridiculous.
Isn't
and,
it?
I mean, this is, okay, so just imagine, right, if we had a genuine, I mentioned earlier on the anti-apartheid, a genuine anti-racism, anti-apartheid campaign. What about a genuine anti-poverty campaign that could unite black and white together? I mean, I just think that this almost seems designed to bring the far right out onto the streets and the idea, of course, Black Lives Matter. Yes, of course. But I think, I mean, there's certainly lots of people in the black community who have said, actually, what we want is an anti-poverty campaign, but that's not what there is. So, you know, it seems to me that it's very difficult for more grassroots campaigns to spring up when you've got such a strong Black Lives Matter campaign. The other thing, by the way, is when they had the big demonstration in Bristol where they tore the statue down, Edward Colston, which I've been campaigning on for the last 10 years to get rid of that.
Where are you, team? Get in there. I can't believe it. This is brilliant. Why didn't you campaign to change the plaque to tell us who the bastard really was? I cannot believe that my best mate, one of my best mates in the media, Gosling, was campaigning to have the statue taken down. Come on, T. We could have just changed the plaque.
Yes, I was. Look, the guy, mainly because he symbolises everything that is wicked and pernicious about the past establishment and the present establishment in the city. This guy is being held up. In fact, you know, what's happening now is you've got the Colston School, Colston Girls School. You've got, you know, the idea that this bloke who was a slave trader should be, you know, in charge of Colston Hall, which is a big music venue, that he should be the guy who oversees our culture when actually he was an absolutely horrific slave trader.
Yeah.
He gave money to great Christian causes, apparently, but he wouldn't give any money to the Baptists or the Quakers or the Nonconformists. This was all the Masonic Church of England he was donating to. I mean, this is the sort of guy he was. And it's absolutely right, I think, that they did what they did to the statue. Yes, you can change the plaque, and we were campaigning for that. I actually, one of the things I did, Richie, in 2014, was I sneaked into the cathedral because the Merchant Venturers, which is this it's basically a company which is formed under a royal charter, so we've no idea, although we've been doing a bit of research into where its massive amounts of money, which was made in the slave trade, is invested today. It's mostly invested in private utilities, actually, you know, which of course, you know, part of the whole privatization, the gas, electricity, water, these sorts of things. And I went into the cathedral, which had been booked by the merchant venturers for their annual charter day service. And what they do is they bring all these school kids into the cathedral, and it's all a totally private event. No one else is allowed in, but I managed to sneak in and record the sermon by the bishop, Bishop Mike, in 2014. And in that sermon, he was telling these school children that any connection with it between Edward Colston and the slave trade was just pure speculation. Right?
You're
That's
kidding
the
me.
Sort of thing we're dealing with.
Yeah.
This is a massive organisation, a very powerful organisation that has private control of our kids' minds now. And that's why I make such a big deal about Colston and you know, we need to do something about this statue, you know, it shouldn't be there. Actually, I think what they're going to do now, I think, is brilliant. It's going to go into a museum, a statue, and it's going to be surrounded by a load of the placards that the local people did on that demo where he was pulled down. So he's been fished out of the drink now, and he's going to go on to permanent display in a museum in context.
Brilliant. Let's stay with the with the culture war, as they call it in the US. And look, I've got to say this again, because there are listeners tweeting me, and some of them are listening for the first time, bizarrely. Of course I accept that black people encounter genuine racism. Of course I accept that. I've never denied that. But I don't believe personally that the country is institutionally racist. I don't believe that. That's my personal opinion. Before Tony comes back in on that, and he'll have plenty to say if he disagrees with that, he'll get plenty of time. I want to stay with it for a moment, and I want to talk about things like extraordinary things that are happening, Tony. Self-censorship is being imposed. And I'm stunned that comedians like Lee Francis, who is, of course, Keith Lemon, is apologising for some very funny comedy that he did back in the 2000s, Bo Selecta. I'm aghast that David Walliams and Matt Lucas are apologising. Some of these people are crying. I'm aghast that the Major is being consigned to the dustbin of history, although he's not from 40 Towers. They've said they won't delete it. These are dangerous times, Tony. And you know, you'll meet black people, and I meet them on social media, and I've interviewed so many black people recently. You know, I'm not looking for a feather in my cap for that, but obviously I reached out to more black people than normal, and they're like, Richie, what the hell is this all about? We don't agree with this. This is dangerous stuff, Tony.
It is, and I think what's happened is the people who were running the fake anti-Semitism campaign against Jeremy Corbyn have now found themselves with nothing to do, so they've turned themselves to this. The Fawlty Towers stuff, it was two episodes which were supposedly incredibly racist. One of them was the one you mentioned, Don't Mention the Germans one, which is a terrific episode. The other one was about the Jamaican cricket team. Now look, the idea is, if you cannot satirize racists, then what is the point of picking up your pen to write anything?
Yeah.
If you can't satirize politicians, if you can't satirize people who really desperately need to be poked in the eye by writers and by our culture, and actually satire is a fantastic release. We see far, far, far less of it, don't we, nowadays? I mean, you know, whatever happened to things like Not the 9 o'clock News? I know that was a long time ago, but
yeah,
every week they used to lay into all of the pompous idiots that we would see, yeah, pontificating about face masks, yeah, or whatever it was they're doing nowadays. You know, every week we'd see that, whether it's Rory Bremner, you know, Mark Thomas, all these fantastic figures through the years always used to do that. Now we're getting absolutely zero, and my God, we need it more than ever, because the people who are actually in charge, supposedly, whether they're religious figures or political figures or whatever they are a bunch of absolute idiots that need this little satirical finger poking in their eye to give us a break, because it's a fantastic release. As soon as you can laugh at these idiots, then suddenly their power disappears, Richie.
Yeah.
I don't know how it does it, but they managed to get rid of that power completely. Things like Spitting Image is another one. Where the hell are they now when we desperately need them?
And what do you think young comedians and comedians, what do you think they're thinking when they see what's been happening? They're not going to be poking fun at people. I mean, the notion that Lee Francis couldn't take the piss out of Trisha Goddard or Michael Jackson, and he wasn't sending up the colour of their skin, he was sending up the fact that they were ridiculous people. I mean, Trisha was ridiculous when she was on daytime television in terms of the virtue signalling and all of that. And of course, Michael Jackson is Michael Jackson. The notion that you shouldn't take the piss out of black, you know, celebrities. But the thing about it is, you do get a lot of opposition from black people to this, but they're basically not heard or seen from very often.
Okay. Do you remember Till Death Us Do Part?
I do indeed. It's been in the news lately, of course, yeah.
Okay, well, I mean, that was a genius program, because what they were doing with that was they had a figure who was a racist in there, right? Alf Garnett played him. And he kept falling on his feet the whole time, falling on his face the whole time. You know, so what you've got there is the racist would love to watch it. Oh yeah, I'm going to see him, use the N word and all this sort of thing. I want to watch it. But actually, what they were watching was a guy basically who had it. So look, you see what this tells us, this attempt to get rid of Fawlty Towers and all that sort of thing, tells us is that you've got a bunch of people in charge of our comedy culture who can't write themselves, and this is what they're doing, is they're seeing, well, actually all this old stuff, this is the stuff that we would not allow to be made today. We wouldn't allow it to be produced today. And we're annoyed because people love it and it was really good. And it wasn't, you know, and it was in the past. So we're going to try and get rid of that too, to basically show just how awful we are at our jobs. Because every time someone watches that, they think, well, why can't we have some of this decent comedy today?
Yeah.
So really, it's just totally self-indulgent rubbish from the morons commissioning editors in BBC comedy, ITV comedy, and in fact, much of the comedy we see right across our country. But I'm sure there's lots and lots of comedians. And in fact, of course, there are loads of comedians who could do this really well. They're just never given a break.
Tony, do you think if in the 1980s or 1990s, if they tried to impose this tyrannical, disgusting lockdown on us back then, do you think that the great comics of the day would have annihilated it? And it wouldn't have happened. And it would have ended very quickly.
I think the thing is, yes, of course they would. There would be, and there's an enormous amount of comedy to be had from what the way things are going on. You know, you've got a mask saying, you know, I'm a moron wearing a mask, and you can wear your mask everywhere. You know, this is literally the whole mask thing seems to me to be about the most incredibly ridiculous thing I've ever seen. I mean, what you do is you see people on the TV wearing these masks, the TV reporters, because they've been told, oh, you've got to wear a mask on television. And then if people see you wearing a mask, they'll think it's normal.
Yeah.
But they're out in the middle of nowhere doing a report about something where there's nobody around them. They're not going to contaminate themselves or anybody else. They're just wearing a mask because they want you to copy them. And they want you to think it's normal and sensible to do it. Well, I got news for them. It's the end of the pandemic. Have you had a look at the figures? The pandemic's finished. If you're going to use a mask to protect people, then you should be doing it at the beginning of the pandemic or the middle of the pandemic, not when it's all finished. This is just bizarre and it's ridiculous, and it definitely deserves to be sent up as much as possible.
It only killed very, very senior people, and most of the deaths occurred in care homes. Vernon Coleman said to me last week, you know who he is, of course, doctor who wrote for the tabloids for years. He said they basically exterminated old people.
I had a book of his called How to Stop Your Doctor Killing
You. Do you remember that? And he got into a lot of trouble for that over the title. I remember it well. So Coleman basically said they've exterminated people in care homes. This whole thing has been one massive farce, hasn't it?
Well, I mean, I think there is, you know, there, some of it has been sensible, right? So look at what the Swedes have done. What they've done is they've sat down, rather than just black and white thinking like Bill Gates and John Hopkins University and Imperial College want us to do. They've said, well, okay, so we've seen the first few cases of this. We've obviously had the experience of Wuhan. Let's look at who is the most vulnerable to this. No, it's not little kids. It's the elderly and specific people, like, for example, people with diabetes, people who have got underlying conditions.
Yeah.
Isolate them, and then let's let everybody else who's not vulnerable to this catch it and circulate around. They can get immunity. What they can do is they can take vitamin C, they can take D, and they can take zinc, and those things will help their immune system, so they'll get over it really quickly and build up antibodies quickly, and it will hardly touch them.
Yeah.
And that's the sensible approach, it seems to me, so that when you have the pandemic pretty much finished, so most people in the country have had it, then you can open up again and the virus isn't circulating because most of the people in the country have had it and have got antibodies and they can't catch it again. So this is one of the things that makes me so suspicious about this, Richie, is the way they had this horrible pernicious thing. Oh, well, you know, you might catch it twice. You could catch it three times. This is a lie. This is just a lie.
Why are they lying like that? Why are they telling these lies?
Well, to increase the fear factor. You know, this whole thing has been about fear, fear, fear. You know, the actual number of people who've died of COVID-19 only. I was looking at the figures the other day, supplied to me from, it was NHS figures, which hadn't been put into an NHS graph. So somebody sat down who's good at graphs and put them into a graph because no one had actually bothered to do it. John Hopkins University certainly hadn't. Bill Gates certainly hadn't. Was that there were the actual number of people who in the UK who died of COVID-19 only, right? Have you seen these figures?
I have.
About
go on.
300 a month. Now, this is not a pandemic. In fact, if you remember right at the very beginning of the pandemic, that the NHS reduced the threat level of
this. They did back in March. That's right.
Virus.
They downgraded it. Yeah. Yeah. They downgraded it.
It's project fear, fear, fear. And in fact, there are a lot of people out there who really are scared crazy by this. And this is one of the things I think, you know, the mental health situation of a lot of people has been complete. They've been tipped over.
Let me ask you a question, T. Let me ask you the $64 million question. Tony Gosling is our guest, by the way. Go to thisweek.org.uk. Great broadcaster, great friend of mine going back many years to my days in Spain when he was very generous with his time and still is. Thanks for staying with me. Tony, $64 million question then. Has the virus, because I believe the virus is genuine, this respiratory infection, I think Vernon Coleman has nailed it. Has the virus become...
I had it, I think I can tell you it is genuine.
Nasty, yeah. And I think I had it myself very early in the year. Do you think the virus is the excuse then for these draconian, you know, basically measures that have been introduced, this whole new normal idea? Is that the excuse? Because I think that might be what's going on. And that, well, that's just tyranny. That's terrifying. Okay. What do you think?
That is one $64,000 question. but my own $64,000 question is it man-made or not? But anyway, look, I'll answer yours. Yes, of course. I think it's quite obvious to me that there's an international program here to make sure that no one is allowed to go back to normal until they've had a vaccine. The whole vaccine thing, suddenly everything has become clear. Why was Andrew Wakefield targeted? I was looking at the science. I was looking at what he was saying. The papers were not reporting what he was saying. They were lying about what he was saying. And it seemed quite obvious to me that the regulation of vaccines had been taken over by Big Pharma, by the companies that are making vaccines. So how on earth can you trust the government to regulate these vaccines when these regulatory bodies are taken over, what they call regulatory capture, by the industry itself? Now, this is an incredibly powerful industry. Anyway, so the vaccine, whole vaccine agenda, this, whether they actually come up with something for this, hang on a minute, you know, is that ever going to really happen? But they're basically saying you will have to have this ID 2020, some sort of vaccination passport. Then once you've had the vaccination, then you don't have to wear a face mask on the bus. Then you don't have to wear a face mask in the pub. Then you don't have to wear a face mask if you're sitting in a hospital waiting room. And do you know what? This dawned on me when I was over in New Zealand, actually, because I was chatting to some people over there who said, people in hospitals in New Zealand a couple of years ago, they said, if you don't have the flu jab, you've got to wear a mask. Now, there was a lot of hoo-ha, this is nurses and doctors and porters in hospitals, had to all have the flu vaccine or they had to wear a mask. Well, to begin with, there was some resistance, but eventually they were, oh, well, they have the flu vaccine. And they all had the flu vaccine, so they didn't have to wear a mask. So that's what they're now, they're translating that to the whole population. But get this, Dolores Cahill, I don't know if you've come across her.
Yeah, of course, Tipperary woman,
Brilliant. Absolutely amazing woman. Anyway, she was talking about the entire situation she's a real expert in all of this. And one of the things she said was she pointed out this thing called vaccine interference, or is it virus interference? I forget. But I can send you a link afterwards to the report. It's a US Army report which says that these fit 20-year-old soldiers suddenly got hit with the flu, sorry, the common cold went around their unit, and there were something like half of them got really sick for a week, and they could hardly move. They were in bed with the cold, and they were thinking, what the hell's this? And they realized, this unit realized, that these were all soldiers who'd been immunized with the flu vaccine previously. Right? Not the cold. So this is a coronavirus. The common cold is a coronavirus. So this is one of the things that she's pointed out, is that, hang on a minute, if you have a flu vaccine, it might mean that you are more likely to die of the coronavirus. So this is an official US Army medical report that she's quoting. It's not some tin pot load of rubbish, and there are other reports of this too. So my question then, from the obvious question that comes from that, is we know many people in British hospitals have to get the flu virus, or they're told have a flu virus every year. So could it be that the reason that we've seen so many cases of really, you know, people dying who are medical workers in Britain is simply because they had a flu vaccine and they've had this thing, whatever it's called, which is called vaccine or virus interference, which means basically they have this cytokine storm, right, which means your body is fighting and fighting and fighting this virus inside. It's nothing to do with pneumonia in your lungs. You're just not getting enough oxygen into your body. And the cytokine storm is what was caused in these soldiers, and that could be what's been killing so many hospital workers, because they've all had the flu vaccine. Now, I'm not saying that. I'm not a doctor. I don't know that's a fact. But why the hell is that not being looked at as a particular, specific, medical, proven reason why it may be that so many people in hospital who've been working in our hospitals have died of coronavirus or got seriously ill because of it, because they've had the flu vaccine?
Tony, it's worse than that. This is from the Irish Times from 4 days ago. A University College Dublin professor, who chairs the Eurosceptic Irish Freedom Party, has been asked to resign from a leading European Union scientific committee over online claims she made about the COVID pandemic. In an hour-long interview with a popular alt-right activist, which has received hundreds of thousands of views, Professor Dolores Cahill promised to debunk the narrative of the pandemic. So what the Irish Times, which is the Irish newspaper of record, has done, it has reported on the fact that she's in deep water now because she's questioned the pandemic, but it has neglected to inform its readership just what the qualifications of Dolores Cahill are, in fact. And, of course, she's qualified up to the gills to talk about pandemics as a full professor at the UCD School of Medicine, clinical biomarkers, yeah, science and medicine.
She's a virologist.
Knows it inside out, Tony.
People in her field.
Knows it inside out. And she's suffering for it now. And the Irish media won't inform its readers and its listeners that, in fact, her opinion, whether you like it or not, is an informed one. And she's entitled to it.
She reminds me of William Rodriguez on 9/11. Someone who was there. Someone's right in the middle of the events, but nobody in officialdom wants to hear a word they've got to say, because what they're doing is they're punching a great big hole through the lies, Richie.
What do you do? Look, we've been talking about these things now, you and me, since 2009, 2010. What can you do about it? There's Dolores Cahill. After she did that interview in Ireland, I reached out to her and I said, come on with me. And I got nothing back. And I know she was aware of the request, and I don't blame her, because they went in on her straight away. And obviously this program has a reputation. This program has been in the national media, and she's going to be punished for it. And maybe the university, maybe UCD in Dublin, maybe UCD might divest itself of Professor Dolores Cahill. Maybe they'll ease her out the bloody door. What do we do, Tony? I mean, this is shocking stuff, you know?
Well, okay, so first of all, we're doing it now, which is to publicise what's happening, the way that people who tell the truth are smashed to pieces with sledgehammers. Well, she's not been yet. She's obviously fighting back. You know, but this is one of the reasons they do this, Richie, is to send a very clear message out to other epidemiologists. If you speak out, this is what happens to you. It's a bit like the sort of punishment killings the Nazis used to do in occupied Europe, you know, where you, if say, for example, some partisans blow up a jeep, then the whole village is executed, or people are executed as an example. If you want a punishment, character assassination. So the idea is somebody is taken as an example and scapegoated, and so everybody else in the profession looks at that and they think, oh God, if I speak out. And that's maybe why she hasn't been on, back to you, Richie, because she's nervous.
No doubt,
you know, she's
no
been
doubt,
basically
yeah.
targeted and bullied. Even though she's the person we need to hear the most, she apparently is the one person we're not going to hear from, and she's being stripped of her credentials in a similar way to the wonderful Andrew Wakefield was.
Yeah. I mean, you and I know it's never about your programme, it's never about my programme, and I never talk about my programme when I'm speaking with a guest. But we've got a very, very large listenership. And these anti-racism groups came out earlier in the year and said, oh, the Richie Allen Show has got 6% recognition in the overall community. I think that's bullshit anyway. But, you know, people shouldn't be talking to the Richie Allen Show. And I've actually had emails from people, nice people, academics in the UK, and I know this has happened to you as well. And they've come back to me and said, Richie, if you don't mind, I'll decline coming on your programme because, you know, I've been advised by, you know, the Jewish Chronicle, or I've been advised by such and such a person that it could be very harmful for me, with you being, you know, kind of right of centre. And I've gotten back to them and said, do you even know who I effing am? Right of centre! Hugo Chavez is my hero. Salvador Allende. I couldn't be any more left of centre if I wanted to be. And it's a tragedy, and I don't take it personally, of course. I totally understand these people. They've got mouths to feed, they've got husbands and wives to look after. It's disgusting that they were saying...
Well, yes, but you know what? We're getting into the situation now where wherever you see an article or anything, really, post on social media saying, oh, this person's really terrible. For example, one of these little screens appears on your Facebook page saying, this is fake information.
Imagine,
you know
yeah.
what? I take a much closer look at that because I think it's likely to be being censored. We're looking at massive censorship, really. I mean, the BBC is beyond a joke, really. I mean, you know, they've got this series on at the moment, this drama series, which is like watching paint
yeah.
dry. About the Skripals. I watched about 10 seconds of it last night and I was literally nearly falling asleep as I switched the TV off. You know, it was appalling. I thought, no, I don't. I've got things to do. I don't want to fall asleep. You know, this program is just, look, what they've done is they've created this fiction of what happened, and you know, this whole thing of these guys coming over and these people being poisoned by this terribly deadly nerve agent.
Yeah, not a chance.
And, you know, and it's all been masterminded by Putin himself and all this sort of thing. Anyway, they've created this narrative and now they've dramatized their lies into some sort of drama. Very much like the Flight 93 thing that happened on the 9/11, where, you know, the idea is you make up the lies and people aren't really believing them, so you have to do a film all about, you know, what really happened. Well, look, I mean, this is absolutely ridiculous that these two guys came over on their own to do this job. First of all, if it's a nerve agent, that those two, Julia and Sergey, would be dead, and possibly anyone within about 100 yards range of them would be dead. Secondly, it's right next to Porton Down, which is the British Biological Chemical Weapons Research Centre, which, by the way, murdered soldiers who thought they were going to be tested for the common cold and then were gassed to death with sarin nerve gas by Porton Down. So you've got them literally 10 minutes drive from the middle of Salisbury. There's just so much to do with that which doesn't make sense. If you're going to have an assassination, a hit job, a hit like that by a professional country like Russia, you have whole squads of people, you'd have safe houses. The people who actually did the nerve gas attack, they would not be traveling on the train, they'd be in hired cars, they'd be staying in safe houses, they personally wouldn't be hiring the cars, there'd be a whole nother squad who would hire the cars for them. And this is all really obvious stuff, and there's a couple of really good articles, which I'm quite happy to send you the links to afterwards, which explain how ridiculous this story is, and that's, I think, why trying to make a drama about it, which is going to grip the public on a Monday, Tuesday night on BBC television, is an almost impossible job, and the soullessness of the drama says it all, Richie.
I look back to that incident in Salisbury, and you know all about the area, and your coverage of it was brilliant. I mean, your coverage of it was almost comical in terms of, I was laughing out loud listening to you talk about it, because it's so farcical, it's so easy to pull apart. And I was very sad at the same time, because I thought, well, whatever is going on, whether it's an agenda or an elite, you know, whether it's secret societies, you know, and you know all about the secret societies.
No, it's not. It's something called Operation Beluga, which is an official CIA MI6 operation to smear and discredit Russia and Putin.
Yeah.
And this is what it's called. It's the intelligence services doing everything they can to create this hatred of Russia. In fact, you know, when you sit and watch ordinary news bulletins, every now and again it's another Russia hate bulletin. And my wife and I laugh at the television, you know, Russian hate story. Oh God, not another one. What are they doing this time? And it's some sort of puny, silly issue. They've got to get one in at least once a week. Another Russian story.
Yeah.
Well, the Russians are really nasty and dangerous. And the idea is to just build up this kind of wall of hatred between the British and the Russians. And actually, I think most of the watching, viewing public see straight through this stuff. They think, well, hang on, is Russia really that bad? But I suppose the other thing is that the propaganda works by repetition. They keep repeating the same lies about Russia is evil. Russia is evil.
Yeah.
Listen, Vladimir Putin has got about something like 20-30% more than half the people in Russia think he's great. Now, if we had one politician, Richie, who, you know, two-thirds of the population thought they were great, I think it would be a miracle in Britain and Ireland.
Absolutely right. And what I was going to say to you was, in terms of me being sad about it, I was sad because I couldn't believe that people swallowed it. And they did, and you just said there about the repetition. They did, Tony, and they're the same people who've swallowed the social distancing. We see them in supermarkets fighting. This is no joke. I've seen it myself. I saw it today in a big supermarket in Salford. I saw people getting angry at one another and muttering at one another because they want to get to a certain shelf and somebody's in their way. And I despair of people. I really do, you know.
Well, don't despair, right? Hang on, I'm here to cheer you up.
Go on, T.
I've been into some of the shops the last couple of days just to see what it's like. Not necessarily to buy anything, but just to wander into a shop for the first time. And a lot of the staff are sort of, they've got this actually lovely British attitude, which is a little bit resentful of all of this.
Right?
And I had a little joke with one of the ladies, and I said, well, everyone's wearing these face masks. It's a bit like China, isn't it? And she tittered, you know. So I said, well, isn't that a totalitarian country? I think it is, isn't it? So we had a little laugh together, you know? This sort of thing, I think, is the way we do things. We put up with it, but actually in the back of our minds, particularly older people, I think, are having none of it, Richie. They're going along with it, but they're not necessarily believers in it. If you want, the faith of Bill Gates has got a lot of running to do if it wants to push the rest of us out of the way.
Brilliant. We're going to finish on this. We've got about four. We'll do four more minutes. I'm going to give you the final word. I'm so delighted. I want to say hi to Craig Moffat. How you doing, Craig? I know Craig is a big fan of the Politics Show, and you're a good self, Tony, but I love Craig today. I was going to say this earlier on, but me and you have had so many arguments about the royal family over the years, I just decided not to say it. But now I can use Craig. Craig says, seeing as Tony is on the Let's Take Down the Edward Colston statue, let's take down all royal family-related statues, as historically they have benefited more than most from colonialism, and they're still raking in the benefits. Get in there, Craig. Tony Gosling, final word to you.
Well, okay, look, I think some of the royals have been fine, actually. Charles I, okay, it's a long time ago. But, you know, I've been doing a lot of work on the Civil War at the moment, and he basically tried to stop people being evicted during the enclosures. During his reign in the 1620s and 30s, and he was getting all the people who were throwing people out of their houses around Britain, mainly in the Midlands, through enclosure. And making them, you know, the idea was to get this massive workforce to start working in factories and things like that. Charles I stopped them, you know, so he's okay. Now, look, listen, most of the royals are annoying. I have no problem really with the Queen. I find Prince Charles particularly irritating, especially now he's decided he's going to be in charge of the world reset at Davos next year. Now, this is, you know, he's definitely not like the Queen, standing back from things and trying to be apolitical. He is definitely weighing in there. He wants to be a world leader.
Yeah.
You know, so let's see what Charles makes of that, because I don't think, it could be he would be very unsuccessful if he takes over from the Queen. as is it looks as if he may be doing in April 2021. There's rumours that the Queen is going to step down when she reaches 95 like Philip did. And at that point, if Charles tries to take over, I think he's going to be in all sorts of trouble because of Diana. You know, this is something that is going to be a running sore for him if he decides he wants to be running Britain, is everyone's going to be talking about Diana again.
Well, that was a brilliant and very neat way of sidestepping the great point made by Craig Moffat. Well done. You should be a politician yourself. They're a shower of bastards.
They're not all the royals, they're German bastards to make it worse. They're not as bad as each other. Some of them are far worse than others.
Yeah, I mean, as a guest in this country, maybe I should keep my opinions about your queen to myself, maybe for today. Hey, listen, I want to thank you for coming back on and giving us so much of your time today. Good luck with the negotiation with BCFM. You know, if there's any decency or any, you know, I would say any, I don't want to say justice, but...
Listen, Richie,
brilliant showmate.
Yeah, much bigger networks than...
The wonderful thing about that is you've done such a brilliant job there for the last few years. It's been outstanding. And,
it's 12 years now. It's a long time now. We've been doing that. And this week, one of the things we'll be looking at is this thing in North Korea. Did you see this just today?
I know, they blew up
the inter-Korean liaison building. Now, it's just in North Korea. This is where the North and South Korean people the diplomats can get and have a quick chat, even though they're supposed to be still at war. Today, the North Koreans blew the place to pieces, right? Now, this to me is very clear. This is a signal from China to the West. If you want a war, we're ready for it.
Yeah. Look, we'll leave that for another day, right? Thanks for coming back on today. You can still hear Tony. Go to thisweek.org.uk for all the details. And where you can, please support guys like him. There aren't many guys like Tony Gosling in the UK or anywhere else. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday, mate. Thanks for... It's a blast today.
There's something special, a surprise for the listeners every week on there. And you can listen live. It's on the People's Republic of Stokes Croft radio web server. So you can listen live from 5 till 7 on Friday. And then the podcast is usually up about half past 7 afterwards.
Thanks for doing it, mate. Cheers, Tony. Bye for now. The brilliant Tony Gosling live on the line to us. Not from Bristol today. Where did he say he was, Tony? I can't remember. Earlier on before all of the rain there. Listen, thanks for listening today. It's a 90-minute show today. I'm out of here. I'm back with you tomorrow, Wednesday, at 5 o'clock UK time. And I will have two guests for you, I'm sure, and more, hopefully, interesting conversation. This programme archives in the usual places I mentioned earlier on, iTunes, Spotify, Podomatic, and it probably will be on YouTube later on. I'm going out with Barry White. Bye.
I heard.